Hey y'all, we have Miss Mizuma on the show today, who is a flight attendant soaring high on her journey to fire.
Besides the fact that Miss Mizuma is awesome, we really appreciated this episode because she shares that she had a time in her 20s where she thought she was on top of the world. She was acquiring rental properties and well on the way to fire.
When it all came crashing down, she had to sell everything and rebuild her life, with her last short sale happening in 2014. She totally made it through and is now back on track. We can relate as two 20-somethings who feel like they have everything together right now, but we're also not really sure. So this episode really speaks to us and comes from the heart. Let's get to it.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Welcome to today's podcast, everyone. I'm very excited to introduce our guest today, the lovely Miss Mizuma.
Oh, hello.
And we also have our awesome co-host, Jay.
Hi.
So I think that I can hear for Jay, but I've been very excited to have you on. You have a really cool story, so I'm really excited that we get to share that with our audience today.
Yeah, well, we randomly met over Twitter. I mean, I kind of know who you were, but you had tweeted out something about needing somewhere to crash in Chicago, and I had you stay at my place. Some random person stayed at my place, so it was good.
Another instance of me reaching out to people and crashing on their couch, and it worked out fabulously because we had an amazing time. I had an early flight from Chicago to Florida for Camp Mustache this winter, and I didn't want to get up at like 3 o'clock in the morning to drive. So I reached out to the Chicago Fire Group and was like, hey, is anybody going to be in town? Can I sleep on somebody's floor or couch? You know, I'm house trained. I don't bite. And Ms. Mizuma was the only one to get back to me. And I was pleased as punch because I had been interacting with you for a while and was very excited to meet you. So, yeah, we had a great time.
Absolutely. Too fun, maybe, towards the end.
There was a lot of tequila being consumed, although, funnily enough, neither you nor I were consuming all that tequila, but...
That is true.
Neither here nor there. So you're a member of the Chicago Fire Group, and sadly not the soccer team, but tell us how you lived your life before and what led up to discovering fire.
Well, okay, so I've always been quite frugal. So when I was growing up, I saved all my money. I always, had little jobs ever since I was 4 years old doing something. And then I got into the real workforce and started saving all that money. And eventually it led me to being a flight attendant, which I did at the same time as becoming a realtor. My first place that I bought was not great for me. I had a terrible realtor at the time. And she kind of steered me into a place that I knew wasn't really right for me. I was like in a community of older people and no one really spoke my language. And there was no bars or restaurants or anything around. And I was 24 years old. So I moved within a year and decided I could do a better job than her. So I went and got my real estate license. And in doing that, I started selling real estate probably in 2004 is when I first bought my place. So 2005, I got my license and started buying my own real estate at the same time for investment properties. And within a couple of years, that all kind of went kaput. So in 2004, I bought my first one. 2005, 6, and 7, I bought my next three. And then I eventually met my husband and or my boyfriend at the time that turned my husband. In 2010, we bought our last property, which was our house. And so at one point I woke up and realized I was $500,000 in mortgage debt and the housing market was collapsing around me. So I was also in a marriage that was collapsing around me too. So it just kind of all went up very quick and down much quicker than it had gone up. So yeah, that was my getting into real estate portion. And so during that time, once I kind of found myself back into the last rental property that I still had, the others had short sold by that time. I had signed over my house to my soon-to-be ex-husband, and I was living in the last rental property, and I started looking for a way out. How do I climb out of this debt and this, depression and everything else that came with it? And I think it started with Zen Habits. I was reading that, and then somehow J.D. Roth came into that, and then somehow Early Retirement Extreme, and then somehow Mr. Money Mustache, and it just kind of snowballed. And it kind of got that whole fire thing set inside of me, and I decided I could buckle down on some of my expenses, which I didn't have many at the time because I wasn't paying a mortgage. I was saving all my money. But I was spending in other ways, like Whole Foods, which was my favorite expense ever. Lovely.
Whole paycheck?
Yes. Lovely organic produce and $8 chocolate bars. But it was, you know, that was the worst of my spending. I didn't go out and buy a Lamborghini or anything crazy. I just was being silly. You know, I wasn't working a lot because I was dealing with a lot of other issues. And so the money that was coming in was going right out the door to Whole Paycheck. So yeah, so it kind of lit that, well, fire inside of me to get on the right track, start working more, start saving again, because at this point I'd lost everything that I had and I didn't feel motivated to start saving again because I knew how quickly it could all go away. And I, you know, it's been 4 years since my last short sale. Literally August 31st was my last short sale in 2013. So
dig into this a little further, because I remember when I first saw your post and I read it, and the first time I was introduced to your blog, and it's when you talked about the whole story of going through all of the rental properties and the high of acquiring them and then the low of when you had to sell them. And being in your 20s, and right now Gwen and I are in our 20s and we're fairly confident. How do we know if we are on the right path or if we're making that mistake? And were there any signs as you were doing it that you were like, actually, I'm in over my head?
You know, absolutely none, because when you're a certain age, and here's the thing, is I've always been good with money. So I'm not saying this as someone who's been in credit card debt and just like spent on silly things. I just was one of those people who was always very focused, and I thought I was building this retirement for myself. And so, and I've talked to Gwen about this because she's obviously just purchased her property and recently was thinking about purchasing another. And I can't tell you the lump in my throat when I hear people, you know, in that situation, because you fall in love with real estate very quickly, especially if you're, you know, new to it. So there is no right or wrong. I mean, there's obviously people like Paula Pant who are very good at what she does, and she bought at great times, and she's been able to do a lot of different things with her properties. She can leverage in a different way than some people can. If you're just starting out, I don't think you should bite off more than you can chew. I obviously did that. At no point did I think I was doing the wrong thing, because I had put down 20% on all my properties while all my clients were putting 0% down. My friends were putting 0% down. They had nothing. They had no skin in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a lot of money invested in these properties. At no point did I think I could lose it all. Not once. So, yeah, I mean, yeah. And that's the thing, is like, I see like where you're at right now with your property and all the issues you're seeing as a first time landlord, for one, because that's a whole nother ball game. You know, it's one thing if you're buying your own property and living in it and then buying another one and renting it out, which is how I did it. But to live in a property with your tenants is a whole nother ball of wax. And, you know, just seeing what's gone on with your contractors and things like that. Like, those are the things you learn very quickly. And if you do that and add extra properties on top of it, it can become a nightmare real fast.
I'm learning so much.
Yeah. But they're such great lessons, you know, and that's the thing, is I try to stop. Like, that's why I started writing about it. Writing the post that you were talking about was a 3-part series, and it was because there was so much to say, and it was very cathartic for me to write it, because I didn't talk about it at all. I didn't talk about it while it was happening. I didn't talk to my family. I didn't talk to my friends. I just put my head down and got through it. And now I feel like I have somewhat of a platform. I mean, I created it. I started this blog just so that I can kind of guard against that for other people or warn other people. And it feels good to be able to be like, all right, this is my situation. This is what happened. It doesn't have to be yours, and it might not happen for you, but you can at least be aware of these things.
We're going to link to that in the show notes. I think it's important for anybody who's interested in getting into real estate or getting into some of the things that we've talked about on the show. They just need to read this just to have a balanced perspective on it all.
No one can see this, but I'm nodding my head vigorously.
And that's one of the things that I learned, you know, when you take on, it was easy to get the mortgages. But when you take it all on, like I was leveraging my future income against my current finances. Like I thought I was going to be making more. And I was, but when the market crashed, like my tenants weren't going to pay more. They lost jobs. One just didn't pay for 6 months. You know, I couldn't even evict her at the time. And it was just a mess. So again, those are the things you learn as you're going through it. I would have preferred to learn it with one property instead of three at the same time. But, you know, that's just how it went down.
What was the straw that broke the camel's back?
My husband at the time, you know, saw me struggling. Obviously, a lot of my money was going to cover these properties. And when I had purchased them, I didn't know anything about the 1% rule, you know, in quotes, but which basically says the purchase price or you should be able to rent it for 1% of the purchase price. So if I bought it for $100,000, I should have been able to get $1,000 for it. Now, everyone has different variables with their purchase price and their rental. But mine, I bought two of them for $100,000, putting 20% down. And the rents were going for $650 at the time. So I wasn't even covering the mortgage and the assessments. So I was paying out of pocket for those two. And then I bought another one. And yes, I could have paid for all of them. But I was paying for all of them. But I couldn't pay once the tenants stopped paying. I couldn't cover all of their mortgages or all of their rent as well as the overage that I was already paying with the assessments and taxes. Right. So I think that that's part of what started it. And so my husband said, you know, if you keep this up, you're going to be broke. And then our house, which we had just bought in 2010, we were going through a complete rehab on it and we were paying cash for it as we went. So now I'm at the point where I'm really stretched thin. And he's like, if you keep going this direction, you're going to put all your money in these properties. He knew before me that the whole market was sinking. And I think I was in denial, you know, when I saw what was happening, I was like, oh crap, I'm stuck in this. And the only way out was to do something that to me was not, I don't even want to say moral because morals really don't have anything to do with it. I always say that I felt like I had played the game by the rules and the banks changed the rules. I had put my 20% down. I was paying everything as I should. And all these zero money down loans and subprime loans and mortgages and all this stuff is what tanked everything. Now, a lot of people feel differently about that. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But at the time, that was what my thinking was. But I thought it was very irresponsible for me to stop paying or for me to try to modify. And so I kept paying. And then finally, I realized he was right. I had to stop. And I tried modifications. I tried all that stuff. But the banks weren't modifying loans if you didn't live in the property at that time. They got around to it later, but unfortunately too late for me. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't modify them and I started not paying them. And two of them went pretty quickly. And then, like I said, the last one thankfully hung around because by that point, my husband and I had decided to separate and I signed the house over to him because I now had a bad credit score due to the first two short sales. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't refinance our house. So I wasn't able to keep it on my own. So I think that was it. Like him finally saying like it was enough. And then me realizing like, I can't do this anymore.
I think it's super important that we have your story on the show right now, because a lot of people can't relate to the FIRE community, because you get a lot of folks who say, I came right out of college. I was making a lot of money. I always was frugal. This was natural to me. This is just who I am. Everything was going swimming and look where I ended up. And this is an example of like, a high, a low, and then back up to a high. So thank you for coming on. And how did you crawl out of that hole?
It took time. You know, I really took time to listen to myself and what I could and couldn't handle. You know, when I first moved into the condo back in the same exact building that I first bought in the city, you know, I'd come full circle. It wasn't the same unit, but it was the same building. And I moved in there. I literally didn't do anything for probably 4 months. I stayed home. I worked as much as I could having a dog. I didn't have anyone to watch her anymore. So I did a lot of turns in flight attendant industry. That's where you go out the same day and you come back the same day. So I did a lot of turns that I could get there and back without her needing to be out and walked. I stayed home a lot. I really didn't go out unless it was to walk or go to work. And I just took a lot of time to do that. And after a while, and you know, during this time, you're also fighting with the banks. You're constantly on the phone. They're sending you paperwork. You're sending them paperwork. You know, I'm trying to do all this stuff. The two short sales had gone through, but the last one, the one that I was living in, hadn't. And I don't wish it on my worst enemy. The type of harassment that you get in this situation, it is not the easy way out. I know a lot of people think that a short sale is an easy way out. It is not, especially when you've had two before and you know what's coming. It's very difficult. But so I kind of waited to get that all done. And in August, when it was done, I had talked to a girl in the building and she was moving out, but her place wasn't available, I think, until October. And so I had a month gap and I had talked to the realtor and I said, look, I've been saving my money. I can pay you up front, you know, for whatever, 6 months, a year, whatever you need, I can pay it because I know my credit's shot. And he was a realtor. He also owned the property. I was a realtor. He knew what I'd gone through and I explained it all to him. And he said, don't worry about it. 2 months is fine. And so I had secured the place to move in October of 2014. Having this month off, I decided to go to Spain and hike the Camino de Santiago, which is a 500-mile hike across Spain, which I had done once before, but this time it was a completely different experience because you're just walking through every step you take. Like everyone says, like, what do you think when you're out there walking? Everything and nothing at all. You're just on a constant loop of, just endless nonsense. And so it took me a month to do that. And I volunteered there a couple of weeks and I came home and I kind of like reset. It was like pressing a button, you know, just reset, start over, start fresh. And like I said, I had started reading about financial independence and that kind of kicked me into high gear once I got back.
Did you go alone on the hike?
Yes, I really adore solo hiking. I'm a fast walker and I walk long days. So for me to hike is kind of a spiritual thing. I'm not deeply religious, but if I was to choose a religion, it would be hiking because it's like where I do my best thinking. I did, however, bring my mom out to the Camino Santiago 1 year. And well, we didn't get as much hiking done as we expected to. Let's just put it that way. It was more eating, drinking, and talking than anything else.
That's pretty amazing. So yeah, how far away are you from FI now?
I am right in the middle, but I don't know how long it's going to take. Like financially, I'm in the middle. I keep changing my number, but I know my date in terms of being retired would be in November 2022. That's when I'll have been at my company for 22 years and I will be I'll be eligible for retirement with flight benefits. So I probably still won't. I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, the healthcare issue is huge in the States and I have really great healthcare for very inexpensive healthcare for very cheap. So I would prefer to keep that as long as possible. And with my job, there's no minimums or maximums. You have to work as of now. So I could literally not work at all for 6 months and still have health insurance.
That's so pretty amazing.
What you're saying is your number is $23,462 a year.
Exactly to the penny. No, you know, I've changed it. Like, so my monthly budget up until a few months ago was $1,500 a month, which is very cheap. I get it. But that's because I own my condo now. So what happens during a short sale is you cannot get another bank loan for 4 years after your last short sale. And so I couldn't get another bank loan, but I saved all my money and a property came up in the same building that I was living in before and after all my other short sales and my divorce. And I jumped on it. I cashed out all my stock that I had bought in my company for the last 15 years I've been flying and cashed out a Roth, which I do not suggest doing, and saved all my money. Do not do that, kids. But so I put all this money into buying my property, which makes my cost of living very low now. Mm-hmm. So at $1,500 a month, I could retire pretty quickly now, but I've also realized I can't live in that property forever. In fact, right now it's for rent. So, I will eventually move and therefore my costs will go up at some point.
Yeah. That's the hard part when I think about how much income I would need in the future, because I've lived in such high cost of living places the past couple years and I've lived in three different states in the last 3 years. So every month my budget is not really set because my housing piece just fluctuates. So it's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah. So you know what? I was going to say, this is something that I wonder about. Okay. I'm 38 years old right now. I can't imagine, and I say this all the time, I can't imagine if I had learned about financial independence in my 20s, because I did so much living and learning of these lessons and growing from them that I wouldn't have had the same experiences. Now, I'm not saying that learning in your 20s is a bad thing. It's not. It's a great thing. But the other good part about learning it now is that I've already had a lot of my big choices in life. You know, I bought the house, I've been married, I've been divorced, you know, I'm not having kids at this point. So I can't imagine trying to go for FI and financial independence and not knowing what my costs are going to be, because I might still be having kids, or I might still be, you know, moving to a different place or gain a different job, or, you know, so that's a thing that I love talking to you guys about, because it's a whole different facet of it.
It's a question mark.
Yeah, definitely difficult, because it's like, well, am I going to have kids? And are we going to live in the suburbs? Are we going to live in a cool spot in the city? Like, where are we going to live? Like, I don't know. There's so much that's up in the air. It's full of gray fogginess that you see like in the inside of a crystal ball, you know?
Right. There's also a lot of opportunity too, because you are younger, you can take more chances. You have the longevity on your side that you can be investing now, and that money is going to grow for you. You know, not that I'm saying I'm older by any means, you know, it's 10 years difference.
So old.
I know. But you know, that's kind of the great thing about it, is even if you make a mistake, and I don't think there are any mistakes in financial independence, but even if you decide, oh crap, my expenses are really double what I planned for, well, you get a job and you move on, you know, move forward.
Suboptimal decision.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But you do what you have to do. You know, if you decide, oh, I'm going to have 5 kids because this one was really awesome, well, you know that obviously your expenses are going to change going forward. So I'm kind of happy that I read about it and decided to take this on at a later stage in my life. But
so what does FI look like for you?
FI to me looks like, well, I'm going to keep my job, first of all, because the healthcare, you know, we don't know what's going to go on in this country, but, and the flight benefits, obviously, but I love to travel. I want to incorporate travel, food. I love dogs. I love my dogs specifically, but I love all dogs. So I would like to do something with shelters and fostering again. I used to foster puppies and I really, really enjoyed that and teaching them. And I also love mentoring. So I want to add teaching kids about, well, I would love to teach them about money. I think that's a really hard lesson to learn, but also just about hope. You know, my parents divorced when I was 14, which is a really hard time. There's no good time for your parents to divorce. I feel like if they divorced at a young age where I didn't know any better, it might have been easier, but mine divorced when I was right in the middle of high school or starting high school. So it's a difficult time, and I would like to be able to mentor kids of that age and just, you know, like you said, I've gone through these ups and downs, these highs and lows, this story. But at no point did I ever feel like I could never rebuild. It was a low time, but you can rebuild. And I would like to be able to give that hope to other people. So ultimately, to wrap everything together, I'm going to have a farm where I bring the kids there to learn about farming and sustainability, and that they, you know, also teaching them these things that we talk about, money and hope. And then I want to take the food from the farm and get a food truck so that I can cook, because I love to cook, and make, I don't know if I'm going to do tacos or soups or something. I don't know what, but all the money and proceeds from the truck are going to go to a dog shelter or something to that kind. So I'm kind of trying to mix it all together. Now, I don't know if any of this is going to happen, but you know, those are my dreams.
I love the plan. It sounds awesome.
Well, then you can come and work with me anytime, because I'm going to need all sorts of people to help. This is like a 4-part operation.
Okay, well, perfect. Because I can help with, you know, the money stuff and then like some of the mentoring, because, you know, my parents divorced when I was 2. So I got the younger aspect there. And, you know, if we can include kittens in that, can we foster kittens?
I guess. I mean, I'm more of a dog person, but whatever. You can bring your cat. We'll do it. That's fine.
The kittens
we'll
are
make
so
room.
Cute. Okay.
They are cute. We'll make room. We'll have a kitty room for them. That's fine.
Yay. Okay, I'm in.
But yeah, you know, I feel like you give back to the parts of yourself that, or the parts, of yourself that you love and hate the most, you know, all the things that you've had to get over in life, those are the parts that other people are having struggles with, and you've gotten over them, or you know how to talk to someone who's had those struggles. So I want to be able to help people who've been in those situations.
That's deep.
Really deep.
I like it.
So I think that's interesting about keeping your job as a flight attendant. That makes sense regarding the healthcare and the flight benefits, although travel hacking is getting pretty good nowadays. So it kind of maybe could be a wash, depending. I don't know. What else is it about your job that makes you want to continue it?
Yeah, I deal with a lot of people, right, every day. And I think a lot of people in this community, in the financial independence, early retire community, talk about being introverted. And I really, really, really thought I was introverted. Like I can relate to that. I believe that's who I am. And then recently I was at an event where I was the one just like jumping around and talking to everyone and, you know, being my little butterfly self. And I realized, holy crap, that's not who I am. Like, I am in the perfect position. And I think it's my job that brought it out in me. You know, I was actually found the other day, my report cards from when I was in sixth grade. And my teacher, Mr. Schoen, who was kind of a jerk, he had wrote on my report card to stop talking to my neighbors so much. Like, I was always focused on chatting with everyone. And I think that all kind of stopped for a long time. I was very quiet. I didn't talk a lot. I think I was trying to figure things out. My parents were divorcing. It was kind of a long process. And then, you know, I got involved in the real estate, and it's like everything was kind of driving me forward, but I wasn't really, I don't know, like I had lost part of my outlet. Like, I wasn't talking to a lot of people. I was just really focused on what I was doing. And now I see myself at work, and I'm constantly the first person to talk to people. I'm always going up and trying to help anyone that looks like they're in need. And I learned so much of that from my job. And I think for a long time, I didn't want to relate. I usually hid in the back. I didn't, you know, we have positions on the plane, A, B, and C. And I never wanted to be A, because I was a person up front who greets everyone coming on, who does all the announcements, who takes care of the pilots, who takes care of the older folks, because they're the first ones on. And I always worked in the back because I didn't want that responsibility of like having to shine all the time, because it can be really consuming, you know, your energy is consumed. But I also realized that now I get energy from it. Like, I like to see people smile. I like to make them smile, and I like to be the one to talk to someone first and put them at ease. So I can't imagine not doing that. And that's why I'll keep my job, but also why I think those other parts that I want to do once I'm financially independent are important to me, because they're all about turning someone's day around. And that's kind of what I live for now.
Hey, Jay.
Yeah?
You know what she is?
What?
She's a woo girl.
She's a woo girl. I was thinking that too. Especially at the beginning when we were talking about calling each other lady or girl. I was like, total woo girl. Which is awesome, by the way. I aspire. Sometimes I turn on my woo girl just to kind of, you know, be that person.
And the thing is that I'm so cynical and sarcastic, and I could, you know, I could be that person, and I don't consider myself like a cheerleader, but then I realize like my mom always says I start the party, which is true. I do start the party, but at some point I'll fade to black. That's what she calls it. And it's because my energy is drained now. I've gotten the party started. I can now sink into the background, just watch it happen. Yes. And that's just what I do, you know?
So, are you an extroverted introvert or an introverted extrovert?
Ooh, deep questions, girl. I am probably an extroverted introvert, because what's going on inside of me when I'm out there and like performing, basically, and I'm not like doing it for, you know, treats, but is I'm thinking, oh my God, these people are looking at me. Why, you know, just be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet. Because a lot of times I will stick my foot in my mouth. I say inappropriate things all the time. And I wish that I had a filter, but I just don't.
You and me both.
It's so terrible. I think that's why we clicked from the beginning.
I'm like, true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm more of an introverted extrovert, because I love being around people. And like you, I get my energy from being around people, but there's a point where I hit a limit and it's just like, okay, I need my quiet time. Like, I need to go and just recharge. Like at FinCon last year, it was go, go, go. And then in the afternoon at like 2, I was like, okay, nap time. And I would go back to our awesome houseboat that we had and just take a nap and just like get away from people and chill.
Yeah, I'm really excited about FinCon, because it's my first time this year, and I know I'm going to be spending some time at your pad, just saying. But I'm excited about it.
Please bring your swimsuit.
Okay, I will. I'll bring you some soup. I'll pull up in my truck that I don't yet have, and I will bring you some soup.
Awesome. Should we ask her the question? I feel like we kind of already answered the question.
I know. Now I'm wondering, like, did she? Well, you know, that'd be curious to see. We'll see what happens with this.
Okay. That's true.
Now I'm nervous.
Okay, so
don't be nervous.
The final question is:
okay,
what is your wildest dream?
Oh crap! Well, I don't know if it's, well, it is. It is actually, it is wild. If you want to go with one definition, I would love to hike the Appalachian Trail. So this is not a dream that would go on forever and ever and ever in my life. It would only go on for 6 months, but the Appalachian Trail is my dream. It's something I've wanted to do forever. It's what got me started long distance hiking. Not that I hiked it, but because I really wanted to and talked myself out of it. So I did the Camino de Santiago instead, but I would like to walk the Appalachian Trail.
North to south or south to north?
South to north.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd probably do the opposite.
I know a lot of people would, but here's my thing is so I've done the Camino Santiago, right? And when you do that, you usually walk kind of in stages with the same people. But when I've done it, I've walked faster than everyone. So I've always been without people when I've done it. Now with the Appalachian Trail, you're kind of starting off all around the same time because you only have 6 months to do it before they close the mountain, right? And I feel like I need the comfort of other people because I'm deathly afraid of being out in the wilderness alone. Like I'm a little snack for a bear. I'm really worried about these bears, and I don't want to, if I go the opposite way, I won't have enough people around me to hear me scream.
I am right there with you. I like seeing my dog when I go hiking or camping because he's like a little dire wolf.
Yes. This is why I got my dog. So I got Sadie because she was going to be my Appalachian Trail buddy. And then when I brought her home, I realized she cannot even walk around the block without stopping to sniff a million times. So she's she's not a good trail dog.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it.
Have you read Wild?
I have read Wild. I liked it. I really like Cheryl Strait in general. I like her writing. The movie I didn't love as much as I loved the book, but yeah, I did enjoy it.
Yeah, the Pacific Crest Trail is on my list. I love hiking. We had an outdoors social media influencer on a few episodes ago, and it's just so inspiring. I wish I spent more time in the mountains and hiking and doing all that.
As somebody who lives in the Midwest, I don't have any mountains nearby.
No, you don't. But my mom always says that our skyscrapers are our mountains. Like, we don't have anything. Anytime we've ever gone anywhere, like when I forced her up the mountain in the Pyrenees in Spain, she said, we don't have mountains. Our mountains are skyscrapers. And she says it all the time. But she's right. We don't have that. We don't have altitude. I was recently in Denver and almost died of altitude sickness because I was nauseous the entire time and had a headache the whole time. And I was like, how am I ever going to go to Machu Picchu if I can't get over 5,000 feet of elevation? So yeah, I don't know. It's still a dream of mine. But you know, with the Pacific Crest Trail, you got grizzlies out there.
I know, I gotta toughen up. I really need to toughen up. I'm working on it. With the hiking thing, so last year I started following Moon Mountain Man, and he's an Instagrammer that takes a lot of pictures and he does a lot of hiking and really scenic stuff. And he was hosting a trip where he was gonna take like a group of 8 people down to South America and go on this long hike and teach you how to take the photography to the level that he takes. He takes some amazing, amazing shots. And I was like, yeah, I'm totally going to do this. My husband was on board. But work got in the way.
Of course it did.
And those are the type of things that I want to be able to do when I hit FI. Just take some time off and explore and learn something new.
Yeah. And you know what? This is the other thing. When you do long distance hiking or anything like that, everyone says, like, why did you come out here? What brought you here? And what the answer to that question on day one will be completely different than the answer to that question at the end. And I have found that in other situations too, when you go into something with one idea and it completely changes. And I feel like that's what financial independence will do for this community. For a lot of people, is you go into it with one idea of what you're going to do, and it's going to completely change within a day, a week, a year, 10 years. And I think that that's the great thing about it, though, is it's very fluid and it's changing a lot. And our ideas of what we want to do for the future change all the time. And it's okay. Like, you don't have to be stuck on this one idea that you have been building for, you know, the last 10 years in your mind. Like, just roll with it. Because when you roll with things, they turn out so much better.
Amen.
Yeah. Cheers to that, for sure. All right.
So well, if people want to get in contact with you, how can they do that?
Well, I'm on Twitter a lot. So Miss Mazuma, M-A-Z-U-M-A, and missmazuma.com is my blog, which I post at strange times and days, but maybe once every other week. And I'm not on Facebook. So yeah, probably Twitter and my blog. That's about it.
Alrighty. Well, we'll link to that in the show notes so people can get in touch with you if they have any other questions.
And thank cool. you so thank- much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on. I'm so excited for your new podcast.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.